This is the Turf Zone Podcast, your central information and news hub, bringing together professionals from turf associations across multiple states to share things to help you and your business. Brought to you in partnership with our friends at the Tennessee Turfgrass Association. This episode is sponsored in part by BuySod, world-class service on demand. Visit us online at www.buysod.com. Now, let's get in the zone.
Welcome to the Turf Zone. This episode continues our series on the USDA-funded Resist POA project. In this episode, we're talking to John Kaminsky, PhD, professor at Penn State. Welcome, John. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's jump right into the Resist POA project. We know that controlling annual bluegrass can be a challenge for our turfgrass managers. And this project is combining efforts of many researchers and participants. So for your part of the project, I understand that there are many objectives. Let's start off with talking about what objectives you are working on specifically.
Well, we're involved in, I don't know how many, it's a lot, several of the aspects of the project. We're lead on two of them. The two that we're the lead on are looking at first seedling emergence patterns. So there's several of us around the country that are basically monitoring seedling emergence throughout the entire year. And so we're trying to be able to model seedling emergence based on temperature, soil moisture, throughout the various zones in the United States, in hopes that we can time and target some of our pre-emergent or post-emergent herbicides to be applied at those specific timings. So that's one that we're taking the lead on. The other one that we're taking the lead on, and I don't know how I got put on this, to be honest with you, but there's an education component to it. So there's an outreach and extension component, which is sharing the information with those in the industry. And then there's an education component that I'm taking the lead on that's going to be more about teaching future scientists and students and developing and pulling together the materials that can be used in classrooms and labs and those types of things. So those are the two that I'm taking the lead on. And I have a graduate student, Kaiyuan Tang, who's really kind of spearheading the research end of the project. Also on, there's a resistance section where we're monitoring, collecting samples from across Pennsylvania, at least for us, and different zones in the United States. And we are screening them for resistance to various herbicides. Apparently, this has been a huge problem in the South and with the southern golf courses and home lawns and those areas. But in the North, we've been screening for a year. We slowed down a little because of COVID. We can't really travel that much. But we're not finding any. We haven't found any resistance so far to the commonly used herbicides up here. So I think that it's we're going to definitely see it be a geographic thing. Herbicides are more of an issue down in the South, and diseases and fungicides seem to be a bigger issue up for us. So we'll have to just keep plugging away and see what else we find. I'm trying to think of what else I'm on. We're also on we're trying to look for alternative controls for POA. So instead of thinking about the traditional herbicides, we're looking at some of these non-traditional or non-chemical controls, pelargonic acid and some of these other products that would be considered more safe to burn down the POA annua. I don't know how successful that's going to be. We put trials out last week and it seemed to burn all the turf, including our desired turf. So I think a lot of it's going to depend on timings, and there's a lot of work to still be done with that.
Great. So you've definitely got a full slate with your portions of this project.
We definitely have enough to keep us busy.
Does this work well? Does this complement some other work you're doing outside of the project, specifically focused on annual bluegrass?
It does, actually. We have been working, my lab has been working on POA going back to the late 90s when I was a grad student. And it's always been a fascinating plant to me. And we've done things like looking at the biology of the plant, but we have also done various management programs and practices looking at PGRs. So for many years, we've been looking at the impact of PGRs that can help suppress it. I've been working on a project outside of this one that looks at a combination of iron, nitrogen rates, and PGRs. And we've had pretty good success in, after repeated years of making these applications, being able to suppress POA annua. So that's something we've continued to work on. And even, you know, 9-10 years ago, when POA Cure was first coming to the market, and it's, you know, just got its label this year, Kiang, who was one of my master students, he did a lot of the early research on looking at herbicidal control, post-emergence control with POA Cure. And that's been successful. I think the caution is, and it leads right back into this project, the caution is, if it's going to be overused, are we going to then get into a situation where we've developed resistance and then we've lost a pretty good herbicide? So it's a continuing cycle. It goes from looking at biology, and then you get into management, and then maybe herbicidal control, and then you realize you're missing something about the biology, and you got to go back and take a look. So I don't think that, you know, from 1998 when I first started working on POA to, you know, 15, 20 years from now when I retire, I don't think that I'll have a shortage of POA work to do.
Your relationship with POA would, on that Facebook checkbox, wouldn't be, say it's complicated.
Yes. Every time somebody says, how do I get rid of POA? I'm like, it depends, right? It depends on what your species is you're managing. It depends on whether you're a golf course or an athletic field. It depends on your budget. You know, there's so many things that go into it in terms of, you know, managing and controlling it, that it's very difficult. There's no silver bullet. Even with POA Cure on the market now, there's no real silver bullet that's going to completely eliminate it.
Definitely. So there in Pennsylvania, how does annual bluegrass rank in the list of weeds? And I know that can kind of be a multifaceted answer as far as the prevalence of it and the difficulty to control. But overall, what's the ranking there?
I would say in the golf course and athletic field, it's number one. If you get into the home lawns, I think some more common weeds like crabgrass, dandelion, and clover become more important. But because of its difficulty to control, its persistence throughout the year, especially in Pennsylvania, and sometimes its ability to produce a poor surface, especially in athletic fields, I would say it's number one. Unlike the South and the Southern people that are working on this project, they see it more as an annual plant. And so it comes and then it dies out in the summer and then it comes back. In Pennsylvania, it doesn't behave like that. It's more perennial in nature. I mean, it will stay around with us all year long. And in some cases, that's good. We have golf courses that have 100% pure POA annua putting greens that are great. You know, Oakmont's a good example of that. But other people want bent grass and they have to keep the POA out. So it's a real challenge for our superintendents and grounds managers.
Definitely. I know that you guys are, would you say, about halfway through the actual USDA-funded project of Resist POA. Is that accurate?
I think that's a good question. I think it's a four-year project, and we're just past year one. So we're into our second year of the project. I came on late to this. They were putting this together well in advance of when I joined the project. And when they looked at it, they realized that they could use some more cool season locations. And so I think that's how I came into it. But I think it started around August of last year, maybe May of last year, and then it's continued. I think we have three more years left. So we're halfway through the second year.
Right. So in that time frame, and of course, with the understanding that research will kind of be perpetual, but as far as this project goes, with the specific objectives you're working on, have there been any trends or results that you can see the path where the industry is going to benefit from this in the future, even if we're still a little ways out from having the research in hand and actual useful practices that we can use out on the golf course and lawns and on sports turf?
Yeah, I think so. The information that we're getting on the biology of the organism, of the plant, has been great. I think that we'll finish up the seedling emergence portion of this project in the spring. And so we'll have, you know, we already have a year's data, and we'll have, you know, the second year data. And we're seeing some interesting trends between germination in fairway turf versus putting green turf. They don't follow the same pattern. So some of those things are going to kind of flip things upside down in terms of what people traditionally think about the timing of germination. And that sounds silly because it's like something that people have worked on for many years, but it really does cater towards the timelines of when people will do certain practices. For instance, we've always said in the Northeast, in Mid-Atlantic, that poa is going to germinate starting in probably late August and really flush into September, October. And so people will time their aerifications earlier so that they can get everything to heal up before the germination of the poa is going to happen. That's obviously a good thing. But now we're looking at this on putting greens and we're seeing different patterns where it still seems to germinate quite a bit in the spring. So I think that's going to help some superintendents and turf managers in their timing of some of their practices. And then the herbicide resistance, I think that that's really expanding quite a bit. Like I said, we're not seeing herbicide resistance in the Northeast, or at least in Pennsylvania, but they're definitely finding it down in the southern parts of the United States. So it's going to broaden the scope of active ingredients that has been found to have resistance and maybe help managers make better decisions on which products they're going to use. So that's good. And the other part that I'm a part of, but not directly, we have a socioeconomic side of this. And so they've been doing focus group interviews and gathering baseline data, which I'm coming to learn is very, very important to show the effects and the impact of our project. So they've met with lawn care operators and golf course superintendents and athletic field managers and discussed things with them. And now they're putting together a fairly large survey to gather even more information. And so that's going to really show us trends in terms of what people are actually doing out in the field. And then 4 years from now, when we start releasing some of this data and getting it more out to the public, we may be able to see that influence the decisions that are made by the turf managers. And that's a good thing, I think.
So in closing, John, what is the overall goal of the project, and what do you hope the industry gains from the Resist POA project?
Well, there's probably a lot of things that we have as goals, but I think the overall goals for us, it's obviously called Resist POA, right? So the overall goal is for us to determine and look at herbicide resistance and document how widespread that is, because it's becoming more of a problem. And that's being done fairly rapidly. But you know, the ancillary goals and the things that are really going to help the practitioners are going to be a lot of the work that's being done looking at alternative methods of control, better use of herbicides. I'm not involved in some of these aspects, but they're doing a lot of work looking at phrase mowing in the South to see if they can reduce poa populations and still maintain turf. And then the non-chemical alternative controls that we're looking at. I think that ultimately we're going to try and produce science-based information that makes managing POA easier for turf managers. I think if I had to sum it up, that's how I would sum it up. This has been a long, long battle that people have dealt with, and I don't think we're going to solve all those battles. But I think by consolidating all of the people from various geographic regions that really have different management styles and practices, based on where they're located, I think we're going to be able to come up with concentrated information for people managing turf in specific regions. And I think that hasn't been done before. A lot of the stuff that's been done are one-offs. In other words, we did a seedling emergence study in Maryland in the early 2000s, but now we're finding that that doesn't necessarily hold up for golf courses in the South or on putting greens. And so I think that broadening the scope and involving more people is going to really help provide a lot more information. And there's already things that are available for turf managers is available on the website, resistpoa.org, that can be useful. They put together a really good site of action chart for the herbicides to show what all the herbicides that are available that have been used on annual bluegrass and what modes of action they have or sites of action. And so people can go online and download that as a poster and pin it up in your shop. There are some webinars and some other information that's on there. And I think ultimately, we're only at the end of the beginning of the second year. I think ultimately, as they consolidate this information, which we're pulling together the first major report right now, as we start consolidating that information, it's going to immediately go up on the website and provide more information for people to understand and better learn to manage their POA depending on where they're located. Because what's amazing to me is I've always been in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast, and we manage POA a certain way, and we usually manage it to keep it, you know, like it's a desirable plant in a lot of cases. But, you know, starting to hear the stories from other researchers from other parts of the country, it's just such a different beast than what we deal with. And I think that that's where the regionality of these specific goals and objectives of the project come in and make this a very strong project. Turfgrass is not normally seen as a USDA or a funded type of project. I mean, there's very few grants that people get. And for Muthu to be able to pull this together with all these people at, I think, 14 different universities and gain access to, you know, $5.6 million to help understand POA annua better, that's an incredible feat in and of itself. And I think the research data that's going to come out of this is really going to help the end user. And the, having this all concentrated in a central website is going to be very useful as well.
Absolutely. Well, John, thank you so much for taking the time to chat today.
It was my pleasure. I appreciate you having me on.
For links associated with this podcast, check out our show notes. And don't miss an episode. Subscribe at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also visit us at theturfzone.com.
You've been listening to The Turf Zone. Thank you to our sponsors, including BuySod, world-class service on demand. Visit us online at www.buysod.com. For more episodes of The Turf Zone, visit theturfzone.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app.